This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey Geekscapists, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm Jonathan London, your host, and if this is your first Geekscape, well, get yourself ready for some pop culture talk. Movies, video games, comic books. We've been doing this for a while now, and we're not slowing down yet. This upcoming episode has an interview with my good friend Rob Kuttner. He's got a brand new book out right now for teens. It's kind of a gross out book in the vein of like Garbage Pail Kids, The Toxic Avenger, Boglins, Madballs, all the gross out fun stuff that we liked as teens. It's kind of having a comeback right now, and we talk about that in the brand new book and working with David DeGrand, who is his artist who on the book and who joins us, and that's coming up for you. So this is the audio version of Geekscape. The video of the interview's up right now on Twitch, Facebook, YouTube, but you guys are in the right spot because I got a lot of great feedback about the audio intro that Heidi and I did for the last episode, because people say, hey, we like hearing what's going on in your life. We like hearing what you think of things like the Barbie movie, which we talked about last episode, or what you did with your summer. And Heidi and I went on about what we did for, I spent 3 or 4 weeks at a summer camp teaching drama, and I loved it. And it was so creatively invigorating that now I cannot stop editing, which is a problem. If I have like 3 or 4 minutes free, I find old footage. I'm like buying hard drives on Amazon and finding like old Geekscape stuff, old narrative stuff. I'm just editing like crazy and making stupid little videos. And they don't necessarily end up like on social media. Some of them are just things that I think are fun and share with friends. I've really, really, really been reinvigorated by spending the summer with a bunch of kids making creative stuff. But wanted to take the time right now to talk to you guys a little bit about something that kind of snuck up on me as far as creativity goes, because I'd counted it out. I'm kind of getting back into comics creatively in a way, as far as making them and thinking about, I don't know, strategies. And the landscape in comics economically is not great. It's clearly become a proving ground for IP, where if you have like a movie idea or a video game idea, you're going to put it out as a comic book because the barrier of entry financially is so much lower. And I love comics. Comics were always like my first narrative love. And I'm really getting into them more and more now, kind of because I'm walking around this idea of making a brand new comic book. And how would I do it? How would I pay for it? Who would put it out? What would be the point? Am I making it for myself? Which, A, yes, you have to check that box every single time, or there's no point in doing it. But really, who am I making it for outside of myself? And maybe some close friends who would get a kick out of it. Is that reason enough to make it? I think it is. I just told you, I'm editing videos that like 30 people will see and laugh at. And that's kind of something that I think I'm getting a kick out right now. I'm getting a kick out of right now creatively. But one of the comics, surprisingly, that has got me reinvigorated was a comic book I almost didn't pick up. And it goes back to some issues I have right now. Now, I mean, whatever, if I got issues. And I don't mean comic book issues, but the X-Men books. I don't know if you're reading the X-Men books over at Marvel, but I was having some frustration with them. You might remember back in 2019, the X-Men books got relaunched with Jonathan Hickman. He's a fantastic writer, and he had this idea to have the X-Men be able to bring themselves back to life. Like, there were five kind of like throwaway X-Men characters, one of which could make these little bouncy balls and throw them at you. And these were kind of jokey X-Men. There was like a possible reincarnation of Jean Grey that was one of them. But these five X-Men were kind of floating around. There wasn't a whole lot that writers were doing with them. And Jonathan Hickman got a hold of them and said, hey, what if those weren't bouncy balls? What if those were eggs? What if these five X-Men together could use their powers to bring back X-Men who had died and reincarnate them? And what if Cerebro, you guys know Cerebro from the movies, if you don't read X-Men, it's like the computer that goes out and finds X-Men and mutants using Professor Xavier's powers. What if Cerebro could be used as like a data backup of the minds and personalities and skill sets and all this stuff of X-Men, but combining Cerebro with these five X-Men who were cast-offs, who, like, they were just, sometimes they'd be in stories, sometimes they weren't, there wasn't much to them. What if these combined could create a regenerative pool of X-Men? So, like, if Wolverine dies, you can bring Wolverine back, and he has, like, a knowledge backup to where he, like, right before he went off to this fatal mission and died. And it started out great. The Jonathan Hickman stuff that started out, there were two miniseries, summer of 2019, that established this brand new idea of regenerative X-Men. But not only that, using Moira McTaggart's powers. Moira McTaggart is another character who, does she have powers? Does she not have powers? We established in Powers of X that she does have powers. Her powers are that whenever she dies, she goes back to being a baby with the knowledge that she always has. Like, she actually regenerates, and people didn't think she had mutant powers because she didn't show any. Her mutant power only came about when she died. And when she died, she would, like, rewind to being a baby and hold on to all the knowledge that she had. We didn't learn that she had this power until she died. So now you've got the Moira McTaggart, who can basically tell Charles Xavier and Magneto and ultimately Apocalypse, like, what they're doing wrong in trying to protect mutant kind from the people who fear and hate them, which is, like, humanity. And what they do is I don't know what alternate realities this creates in the Marvel Universe. Like, maybe Ian and I should go into that. Like, hey, if Moira McTaggart is going back in time and correcting Charles Xavier's decision to bring students to the X-Mansion, or with Magneto, establish the mutant nation of Genosha, or, you know, on and on, or maybe Apocalypse coming back and, you know, actually ruling humanity by force and protecting mutants. She's doing this revision stuff, but, like, what Marvel universes is that happening in? Is it happening in like, is the ultimate modern day X-Men where they get it right? And they establish an island nation on Krakoa, which is what I'm talking about briefly right here. In the comics, they establish their own nation. And Krakoa is a mutant in and of itself, but it's an island. It's from classic X-Men. It was the base that the X-Men had to go and save the old X-Men on back in classic X-Men number one, the giant-sized X-Men that introduced Wolverine and Storm and Colossus. They had to go and save the original team on the island of Krakoa, which is like monster islandish almost, and it creates all these different plants, and Charles Xavier is using the plants to, like, heal mankind of all these different ailments. But you have to be a sovereign nation a nation that can communicate with Krakoa and work with Krakoa to save the mutants. Like, in the comic books, like, Russia was like, we are not acknowledging Krakoa as a nation, we hate mutants, and we're not going to send you any mutants. But they could, like, teleport from Krakoa to different places using these little plants that could create doorways. So it got really sci-fi. And it sounds complicated, but it's actually really cool. Ultimately, the questions come up. Like, again, if Moira McTaggart is going back and resetting Charles Xavier's plan to protect mutants from humans, but also create a team of X-Men that are also supposed to protect the people who fear and hate them the most, which version of the Marvel Universe are you resetting? Is this modern one where Krakoa gets it right, where the X-Men become, where the mutants become dominant and are protected through their ability to reincarnate? Is that the same one that had like the Kree-Skrull War? Did that happen in every iteration of the X-Men? Did Days of Future Past, the future that, you know, brought this, you know, it was all about the Sentinels and the death of mutantdom, does that still happen in every version? And so you start thinking like, okay, this is just opening up a bunch of multiverses thanks to the X-Men universe, because they keep going back and resetting until they get it right. Well, they get it right. And as soon as Marvel got these two X-Men books from Jonathan Hickman that were just awesome. If you can go find them, go find them. They're from summer 2019. They're definitely collected by now. They started putting out other series. And that's where things started kind of slowing down. I think Jonathan Hickman left the book. The main X-Men book was still pretty good. The Kitty Pryde book about the Marauders was awesome. X-Force was pretty good, but you started getting like X-Men Red. You started getting Immortal X-Men. You started getting all these different X-Men titles. Before you know it, Jonathan has like, it seems like 10, 12 X-Men titles on the shelves, which is just what's going to happen with a comic book company that strikes gold. The X-Men were back, and they were fun to read. They had interesting sci-fi ideas about this whole idea of reincarnation and mutants being on top suddenly and not being hunted, but having their own sovereign nation that is actually an influence in the world. And they even terraformed Mars and created Mars as like its own mutant planet. There was so much cool stuff that was happening, but it started to get diluted amongst all these other books. Because ultimately I go into the comic store, I want to get the X-Men story that I'm following, and I have to get 9-10 books to do it every month. I definitely got fatigue, and I started shaving down to just, I think, X-Men, X-Force, Wolverine. I was reading those three. And then suddenly Ian sends a text that says, hey, this next Hellfire Gala book is huge. And the Hellfire Gala is like a yearly annual, basically, that happens in the X-Men books where they name a new core X-Men team. And, you know, it's a fun kind of thing. It feels like, back in the 90s, they had like swimsuit editions of comic books. Like, it's really weird. But when the Sports Illustrated swimsuit edition was big, I remember it's probably 94, 95. There was an X-Men swimsuit edition where it was like the X-Men characters in swimsuits, male and female. And it just seemed like this kind of like cash grab release where it's like, oh, you want to see Storm in a bikini? Great. Drawn by amazing artists like, you know, Jim Lee, Silvestri, that kind of stuff. And so it's like, okay, I don't know if I'm going to read the Hellfire Gala book, because I'll find out who the new X-Men team is in the X-Men book. And that was where my frustration started coming in, where I think that like major events should just happen in that core title, the X-Men title. The book is called X-Men. Like, I want to read X-Men and find out what's happening with the X-Men. But suddenly I had to read a bunch of other titles to find out what was happening to the X-Men. And Hellfire Gala, I was like, well, that just tears it. I don't need to see them in fancy costumes announcing a new team. Boy, was I wrong. The first 2 years of the Hellfire Gala is roughly what I described. Introduction to a new X-Men team. This new one, the whole time that this X-Men stuff has been going on, there's a group called Orcus, and they're like hardcore humans. They're like, we don't like mutants. We don't want mutants on Earth. We just want humans. We're backing up humanity, and we want to kill all the humans or all the mutants. And they are like creating super sentinels. They even, one of them even took over Stark Industries and made these Stark Sentinels, which is like Tony Stark's technology in the Sentinel program, these mutant hunting giant robots, right? And that was, you know, cool. So like in a couple of these books that Jonathan was or was not reading, including Iron Man, which isn't even an X-Men book, you're starting to get like the machinations of this group Orcus planning something big. They're planning something big. Well, it all went down on the third Hellfire Gala book, and thank God, the God of mutants, whatever God you believe in, thank goodness that I picked it up and that Ian texted me, because this book is psycho. This is where it all goes down, and Orcus finally attacks, and they do it by straight up slaughtering the new X-Men team as soon as they're announced. Like, they are cutting people in half. This is a really violent book. They also use the book sort of to I would say, like, shoehorn a little bit more of the Miss Marvel is a mutant stuff that we got in the Miss Marvel Disney Plus series, where it was like, oh, Kamala Khan is a mutant. Well, in the comic, they definitely do their best to say, okay, well, she had an inhuman sort of, like, experience, where so she is technically an inhuman, but yeah, she was a mutant the whole time, and she can be regenerated. She can be regenerated the same way other mutants do. So the book starts with Kamala Khan being regenerated. She died in the Spider-Man books, and that was, I thought it was a pretty cool story. It didn't get spoiled for me. It made national headlines that Marvel was going to kill a major character, and it got spoiled for a lot of people, especially if you're on Twitter or something, that Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel, was going to die. I just probably spoiled it for you right now, but listen, if you're reading it, you're reading it. If you're not reading it, you're not reading it. I thought it was a really well-written story, and then here she is getting regenerated just a few months later because, hey, she's got a major movie coming up in November. She better be back. But she gets returned in the Hellfire Gala. You're like, oh, cool, everybody's happy. Kamala Khan's back, and she's a mutant, and maybe she wants to be open about it, maybe not. And then they're like, hey, let's introduce the new X-Men. And I'm telling you, I'm looking at it right now. There's a full page of Nimrod, who is like a super sentinel from the future. He's like a sentinel that, I don't know why they don't make more of them, but there's one Nimrod. And Nimrod drops in on this new team and splatters them. It is violent. Knocks Jean Grey out the freaking window. Stomps on one of their heads until it pops. It's disgusting. And the only one who survives is Juggernaut, because he's the Juggernaut. He was going to be on the X-Men team. And then you've got pages of Nimrod, Juggernaut, and Iceman going like toe-to-toe trying to stop Nimrod. Meanwhile, other people are fighting. The Bobby Drake Iceman stuff is just violent, what happens to Iceman in these pages. And it seems like every time I turn a page, it's just an epic moment after epic moment. There's multiple artists that were part of this book because it's a giant size book. I think it was like $8.99. Thank goodness I get a freaking discount at my comic book store. And Orcus just straight up takes the X-Men and all of Krakoa apart. And they hold Charles Xavier hostage and they say, listen, we've all those super plants that you used to like cure humanity's ailments like cancer and this and that, we actually poison them. And we can flip a switch. MODOK, you remember MODOK from Quantumania? MODOK can flip a switch and cause humanity to go crazy and kill themselves. So, Charles Xavier, if you don't want humans to kill themselves, you're going to take credit for this. And you're going to force every mutant to leave the Earth and walk through these time travel, you know, these transport portals and leave the Earth. And they're holding humanity hostage. Orcus wins. And it is such a downer book at the end of it. Charles Xavier tells all the mutants, please walk through the portals, go to Mars, go off planet, leave the Earth, or they're going to start killing humans. And the last page is Charles saying, oh my God, I can't, like, Rogue flies in and saves Charles, gets him away from the bad guys. I mean, at the end of this, Cyclops is kidnapped. Who knows where all these mutants are? And Charles has sent almost all of the mutants through the gates, except the ones who were able to resist, like Nightcrawler. The core X-Men were able to resist, right? Like, they've been trained with their mental capabilities to even resist Professor X, you know, forcing them to do something they didn't want to do. The mutants that couldn't went through the gates, and the last page is Charles saying, I can't sense them. They're gone. Like, all the mutants are gone. The mutants went from, like, the most dominant part of the Marvel Universe to erased, and now there's only a core group of X-Men, like, hiding in the sewers, working with Tony Stark and some other characters to make sure Orcus pays for it. And it's like, And like the whole thing is like avenge the X-Men, avenge Krakoa. And it's cool because as frustrated as I got with the X-Men books for a long time, with the just proliferation of titles that I felt like weren't a cohesive story. And if they were, if it was a cohesive story, it was far beyond the breadth of my ability to read it. because there's just too many titles for me in my pocketbook. It feels like it's back. It feels like the X-Men are back to swearing to protect the people who fear and hate them. There, I don't know how many X-Men are left. Of course, like the big ones that you want to save for the MCU movies. And then we got some X-Men left, and they're going to work with Captain America and some of the Avengers who are like, we know you didn't do this. We know you didn't make humanity go crazy and start going psycho. You know, we know you didn't poison your own drugs. And now I'm really into the X-Men books, because there's an Avengers X-Men team up book called Uncanny Avengers. It should be called, what was it? Avengers, Avenging X-Men, I think it should have been called. But, I think that's a joke that Deadpool says in the title. But, now I'm into it. And I think the X-Men only really work when they're like the persecuted minority. Not that we love persecuted minorities as remaining persecuted minorities. Ideally, we want the persecuted minorities to no longer be persecuted minorities. But as far as the X-Men books go, the X-Men story, I think it's an important story to tell for anybody who feels other. And I've had people come up to me and say, oh man, this Krakoa stuff is so good. This is the way the MCU should introduce the X-Men. It's like the Krakoa stuff. And I don't agree. I don't agree, because in the Krakoa stuff, to a point, the X-Men became almost gods to humans. They were able to cure them of all sorts of ailments. They were able to transport all over the place. They could regenerate. They could come back to life, every single one of them. So they were gods, and I don't think that's how you introduce the X-Men at all. You don't introduce them as dominant. You introduce them as the persecuted minority. And the status quo shifted big time on this Hellfire Gala. Do I wish it was a core X-Men book? Do I wish it had been just X-Men and happened in the X-Men title? Yeah, of course. I wish it would have at least happened in an X-Men annual, but it happened in like a book that that I equated earlier to the swimsuit issue. And suddenly, like, my eyes were popping out reading this thing. I was like, holy shit, they're just straight up killing mutants and the status quo, and people are getting ripped apart. This is insane. And I think you read stories for the big swings, right? Like, you read them for the big moments, and that Hellfire Gala number 3 was a big moment. And damn, it was crazy. So if you're not reading the X-Men books, don't start now, because everything basically already went down. But of course, the X-Men are now minorities, and they'll find a way to revamp and bring the X-Men back with a brand new thing. I think that the talk is like 2024 is going to be this whole Fall of X thing, where the X-Men avenge Krakoa and bring Orcus to justice and all that stuff. And then I think there's going to be a brand new wave era of the X-Men, and that's, I'll let you know. And that's where you want to jump on. Okay? But unless you're going to go back to the Jonathan Hickman stuff, Powers of X, and all that stuff, don't start now. Because I would say 95% of the X-Men are fucking dead. All right, let's get to the episode. It's a great one. I really love talking to Rob and David about the creative work and the gross-out humor that we loved as teens. Here it is. Hey, Geekscapists. Well, oh man, did I butcher that. Hi, Geekscapists. You'd think that I haven't done about 1,000 of these Geekscape episodes when I come out of the gates like that. I'm Jonathan London, your host. And if this is also your first Geekscape, because it's clearly mine, we're talking movies, video games, and comic books. If you're watching the video on YouTube or Twitch, or on Facebook, maybe you're watching it on LinkedIn. Did you know that it went to LinkedIn? It also goes to Twitter. I refuse to call it X. Somebody today was like, I saw this on X, and it literally took me about 30 seconds to realize what he was talking about. And he was talking about Twitter. And I said, no, dude, like, I'm always going to call it Twitter until it burns to the ground. X will be known as Twitter, at least in my household of two people. Definitely in any conversation I'm in. This is Geekscape, and if you're watching the video, I've got a pretty good interview coming up with my good friends David DeGrand and Rob Kuttner, who's been on the show before. Rob was on episode 500. I remember that one because it was 500, pretty easy to remember, one of those solid whole numbers. And they've got a brand new book called Snot Goblins. They're here to talk to you. And yeah, if you're listening on the audio, well, you just got a whole bunch of exclusive content that I talked about just now as I started the show. Can't wait to talk to Rob and get him back on the show, see what he's been up to since he was last on, and find out what David's all about. This is David's first time on the podcast. Cool guys, though. Super cool. I love Rob. He came up to me at Comic-Con and he said, "Hey man, I got this new project called Snot Goblins. If you're a fan of things like," I would say it's comparable to, like, if you're like teen gross out stuff, like when we were teenagers, we loved Garbage Pail Kids, or maybe we liked Madballs and stuff like that, or Toxic Avenger, you know, really gross out, cool teen stuff. And with, you know, got to start thinking about the holidays and giving gifts, maybe the teenagers in your life. And I think Snot Goblins might be the right gift for them. It's a book. It's a comic. It's like a graphic novel. I kind of love the publisher. We'll talk about that. But let's just get to it. This is Geekscape. You're here. Strap yourselves in for some comic talk. I survived a hurricane. I don't know if y'all have been keeping up with the news, but Tropical Storm Whitney is kind of what everybody in North Southern California has been talking about. And we braced for it. Did we brace for it? No, I mean, I don't know. But we got more water. Heidi's into that stuff. Heidi's like, we got to go to the storm. We got to get this. We got to get that. We got to make sure that we have enough of this. I cut that number in half, and that's what I go out and get. So that'll probably be the death of me one day. But if anybody needs jugs of water, I got some. Somewhere in the shift, though, in from like rainy to sunny and back and forth within 24 hours, I think I caught my own little snot goblin. You know, some kind of allergy or something happened with the shift in the atmosphere that's going on here because of Tropical Storm Whitney. But I'm not going to go ahead and complain too much about getting rain here in Southern California, especially not in light of what happened in Maui. That's a true tragedy. And I welcome and urge all Geekscapists that have some money they can put towards charity to research some of those Maui charities and put their money towards the rescue efforts there. All right, let's get unserious here on Geekscape. I've got two good friends waiting here to talk about their new book, Snot Goblins. I have a PDF of it that I read, but I actually want the book. I want to have the physical book, and I'm excited to have it very soon because I like this gross-out humor stuff from when I was a kid. Again, stuff like Garbage Pail Kids. Those are the ones I'm going to go to. Garbage Pail Kids, Toxic Avenger, Boglins. Remember Boglins, those little things you put your hand in, and the little Boglins? And Madballs, of course. Those are like the ones where you like they're gross, and you'd like gross out the girls on the playground in college. I was about to say high school. And like middle school. It's like, you know, but they got this new book, Snot Goblins, kind of what it is. And let me bring them on the show. Let's see if Robert's ready to come on. He ducked out of frame. All right, Rob, come back on Geekscape. There's Rob Kuttner.
I'm back.
There's David DeGrand. Hello. You're back on Geekscape, Rob, and you've been busy, dude. This Snot Goblins book, it's a lot of work. I mean, not that, you know, David did a lot of the art and you wrote it, but like, you know, you've been busy. I caught up to you at Comic-Con. You came up to me after the panel. Like, hey, do you remember me? Of course I remember you, Rob. Are you kidding me? You were like, hey, remember you? I was on Geekscape. Come on.
I liked it. Well, you've had a lot of Geekscapes. I mean, I know whenever. Yeah, we're up to almost 700.
I don't do anything else. That's the thing, Rob. Like, this is all I do. I don't leave this room. Mm-mm. And so
is this, you come up and say, community service kind of thing?
Yeah. Please help me. I'm blinking.
This is jail cell.
Help me, please. No, you came up and said, hey, do you remember Rob Kuttner? Of course, immediately. And then you handed me the bookmark for Snot Goblins. And we're like, I have this book. And I was like, yeah, no, anything you want to promote on Geekscape, you have carte blanche right there. And you're hilarious. And Geekscapist, he's written all sorts of hilarious stuff, Conan being one of them, all sorts of comics and cartoons. We all love the Teen Titans stuff. And here you are with your new book, Snot Goblins, and you brought David, your artist, along for the ride. Where did this idea come from, guys? Is this Rob's idea, David's idea? You guys, how did y'all meet over the project? Or like, tell me about how this came about.
Well, first of all, David gets credit for the bookmark because it was his idea and his designs caught your eye.
Thank you.
Hopefully caught your stomach too at the time.
Yeah. They're scattered all over the parking lots, you know, and recycled bins and everywhere.
Well, I was going to say David and I met working on the reboot of Mad Magazine, where he cartooned and I drew and we collabed together. But David really came up with the idea. And if you want to talk about that, David, because you brought it to me.
Sorry, you might be having a little bit of a streaming issue with David. I don't know if the Geekscape is watching this or getting it, but David,
my question just caught him off guard and he froze.
It's fine. you sent him into the fucking multiverse with that question. David, if you want to reconnect, if you're even hearing this, if you want to reconnect and get back, let us know. I hope he's not on that damn infernal iPad. Like he told me, he's like, would the iPad be good for this? I said, no. No iPads on Geekscape. And he said, okay, cool.
What a lot of interesting backstory we've talked about.
I know. I mean, well,
I can David, go ahead and talk until David.
Well, yeah, while David's frozen in the negative zone, why don't you talk
to Rob about, right now.
Yeah. Why don't you talk about putting the book together?
This is cool. This has been a really like power move, I think. I've picked up a lot of just you and me.
All you had to do was send a virus to David and the show's all yours.
Right. As David would have said, I'm going to do it in his voice. Now, as David would have said, he's a huge horror fanatic. And I know that David's in demand and sort of like the kids world. He's done a bunch of kids books and stuff like that. And he had people coming to him saying, like, do you want to do like an anthology of like little, you know, short kids stories? And David's like, yeah. And I want to do like horror stories. And so we found very quickly when we worked at Mad Magazine that we're kind of on the same. We're in the same sophomoric level of sensibility. Like we have a good vibe together. David told almost the whole story.
Okay, man. I'm sorry, my friggin' internet here in Texas.
Listen, they have blackouts, and that's what you get when you're on your own electrical grid. It's like, so, David,
freedom is what you get.
when you're a governor, thanks, man.
when you're talking about being a horror fan. Right, David. That's what. Mm-hmm. And you think about like the idea of Snot Goblins, where it influences things like Ghoulies and Critters,
like
and like those Munchies. Is there a Munchies influence Munchies in there?
And all those, yeah, of course, Gremlins and like all those little like '80s rubber monster, you know, movies. And like you said at the beginning, like Boglins, Madballs, Garbage Pail Kids, yeah, all that stuff. It's like those are all cool gateways to like. Weird underground exploitation movies for kids that I was always drawn to.
I think you're right. Like something like Munch, like Gremlins was the one that obviously got it going.
They got the ball rolling. Then,
from there, we're all into Critters as kids. Uh-huh. If you have a parallel childhood to me, and then from Critters, you start getting to like the more like TNA type stuff. Like you're just like, oh, these are a little more risque. Where it's like Munchies. The cover of Munchies when you walk into the VHS store. Is like a little gremlin looking thing looking up a girl's skirt. Do I have this right?
Yeah, that's correct. And Ghoulies has like the one coming out of the toilet.
So that's like a gateway for sure.
I mean, how could I not want to watch that movie? Yeah.
No, this is all heavy influence. But then, of course, you use that stuff to like. Gross the girl out on the playground, like we said, you know, or like tell your friends, like, you push the envelope. Oh, I saw this movie. My dad let me see it. My uncle let me see it. I got to watch a bit of this gross movie. Those were all big influences for you, Dave.
Yeah. I remember watching like having cable. We got cable when I was like probably about 10 years old or so, and so I was constantly scanning through the movie channels, finding all those weird, crazy movies, and like probably shouldn't have been watching them.
Cinemax,
but yeah, and then like in the. One of the thing that the movie scene that I remember, I think first warped me early on was the Large Marge scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Cause I remember it horrified me, but it was also funny. And so something like that, just like, you know, connected some synapses in my brain. It was like, oh, I want to create something that gives that reaction. So I think from that scene on, thank you to Paul Rubens, RIP, you know,
for sure.
And then, you know, then I was, you know, big into like the Ren and Stimpy show is another huge, gigantic influence as well. Just like, because it was just like, because I know my dad hated it, and that made me love it even more. And you know, ironically, because it's a big part of Slot Goblins, we wanted parents to be like, put that effing book down. But the kids would be like, no, I'm going to read it, Dad.
And kids love this stuff. They love the gross-ups. But I think books like Dog Man, like little, like bizarre, like just bizarre stuff. Dog Man, yeah. Captain Underpants. I mean, somebody running around in their underpants, like that's big with kids, and he's got superpowers. Like, the more absurd, I think, the better. Would you say that this is in that lane with that kind of book? Is that if a kid is into Snot Goblins, or if a kid is into those kind of books that are comic book ish, maybe have a little bit of prose, but yours is very comic heavy. Do you think that that's like, if my kid is into, you know, that kind of thing, this would be a good book for them come Christmas or come
both birthday. My kids, I have two kids, and they're both like into their Captain Underpants and Dog Man. They're two totally completely different personalities. Couldn't be more different. But both of them went through a period of like being really into like both of those books, like, and like multiple rereads. And I think it is kind of some of the, you said absurd, but I think kind of what it is like, it just rides up to the edge of like the inappropriate, you know, like underpants is like, you know, if we said Captain Rectum, I don't think that would, fly. Or,
you can't even say that on, you can't say that on Geekscape. No, I'm kidding. Oh my God.
What are you?
Or even Dogman is like, sounds kind of innocuous, but you know, every single time you read it, it has the backstory where it's like literally like this dog's head is like surgically sewn into a guy. That's pretty effed up. I mean, for kids. So it's right on that edge, I think. But I think more it is kind of that kind of like, very kid centered humor, I think, like a kid's perspective on things, which David and I are both man children, and we just
totally channel it. Yeah, and something that's funny is about when it comes to, you know, the bizarre and like when we did a promotion where we had kids submit like the grossest thing they could think of, and then I would illustrate it for 30 days up until the release of the book, and kids came up with most disturbing, insane things, you know, that I could ever come up with in a million lifetimes. So it's like,
what was the most disturbing?
The one for me was like, it was a little, I think 9-year-old girl came up with like a series of like corpses vomiting up another corpse, and each corpse that's vomited out is more disgusting than the one before it. Like,
can I present on this? Cause I can show you, I have,
I don't think you can, but if you want to put if you want to put a, like, you know what, email it to me. Email it to me, Rob, and
I think they're on the website,
or put a link in the private chat, and I'll bring it up, because Geekscapists who are watching this on video, you're gonna want to see whatever the heck David and Rob are talking about. And so it was your idea, though, correct, David? The whole Snot Goblins thing, like when did this start?
I was just trying to when Mad Magazine stopped publishing new material. It was around the same time where I was the artist and writer on the SpongeBob comic book, and they stopped publishing as well. So I was just trying to get something up and going. And, you know, I knew Rob's work. I loved it. I thought it was hilarious. And I think we met through somehow on Facebook or something. I don't remember now, but I was just like, man, I would love to, you know, I was just like, hey, let's just throw out any crazy idea I got with him. I was like, let's just work on a book together. And I always kind of loved like anthology, kind of like, I always thought of this book as like a Tales from the Crypt, but for kids kind of anthology, like old EC Comics combined with like, Captain Underpants or Diary of a Wimpy Kid or something like that. So,
yeah. What I like about it is when Rob told it to me, and again, Rob, feel free to email that or put a link in the private chat and I'll throw it up on the screen.
There's so much disturbing follow-up from this picture. My head's already
hurt. It's all good. When Rob told me about the book, I was like, okay, it's called Snot Goblins. Okay, that's the book. But then when I saw the book, when you guys sent me the preview, I was pretty amazed at the fact that it was exactly like you said. Like, it reminded me of like Shel Silverstein-ish, how he has like multiple stories within a book. Because it's not technically called Snot Goblins. The book is Snot Goblins and Other Tasteless Tales. So if you get this for your kid, there are a bunch of different stories, the Snot Goblin story being one of them, which is just...
It's just front and center.
That what I love about it is it's equal parts Adult Swim and just like mid-70s, 60s like zine comics. You know what I mean? Like, it just reminds of like R. Crumb type stuff or 8-Ball, but for kids. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that both R. Crumb and 8-Ball and that stuff, Dan Klaus, were influences for you guys. If not, correct me, but like, this is what it reminds me of, is like a gateway drug to maybe some of those more alternative comic artists that, you know, still pretty influential.
From your lips, man.
Well, that was kind of the goal for me.
Yeah.
It's always like, you know, I would love, you know, just like the stuff that I was inspired by. I'd love for kids to, you know, look at this book and be like, man, what is, you know, what are some of the influences on this book and what else can I go look up and, you know, let this be a gateway to other cool, you know, underground weird stuff, you know, that weirdos like me are drawn to.
You notice also like this character Big Mouth that you've passed a couple of times, like a Crypt Keeper, like the sort of storyteller. He swallows up sort of famous books that we, David and I like, and he chews them up and spits them out his own way. So you'll see the titles on there. So like the kids who are paying attention, they'll see like everything from like Nosferatu to like Snow Crash to like, you know, like all the kind of books that we've absorbed. Like the kids can, like, if they want to go further into it, they can say, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to check that book out.
As they get older.
Yeah.
Or now, and it just bends their brain.
No. Yeah. Exactly. They're not ready for it yet.
So because you guys each came to it with your own stories and you guys were kind of jamming, like, hey, what if there was a story that was a vampire? What if there was a story that was based on, like you said, Snow Crash? Like, who took the reins on each individual story, or at that point did it become actually both of y'all working as a cohesive like pair?
Seems like we just like spitballed. We each just spitballed like about 10 ideas to each other, and then we would filter out, you know, which ones we thought would, you know, would be funnier, you know, just would fit into the book better. It's been like what, 3 years ago now, so we first got this going, so it's hard to think back so long ago now. But yeah, I think we're just like,
this is like your pandemic project.
It
sort of started before it, but it lasted through it, I think. You know,
right?
I remember.
Unlike a lot of relationships.
I have a great example of like our collaboration at its most weird was David's idea for the second story was called The Vampire. So it was a vampire, and he didn't like biting people, so he would hit him with a mallet and then lick the blood off the mallet. And
like the act of sinking teeth into something was too gross.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
It was just like the
So I don't know if David, but I probably not even told you this before, but so I thought that was hilarious. And we both liked that. And he drew up some art for it in the proposal that we sold. And then when I sat down to work with it, I was like, I'm not sure there's enough of a story here. I'm not sure there's like, you know, it had to be like 42 pages, something like that, each one, or David. So but the funny thing is, like, about influences, I was also reading, you know, Will Eisner at the time. So Will Eisner has this great little, I guess, graphic novella called Dropsy Avenue, which is about like, I don't know if you know it, David, but it's like the American immigrant experience all takes place in this one apartment, I think in like the Bronx, like over generations.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of amazing. And so that was just in my head. And I was like thinking about, well, what happens to the vampire who's like, who just doesn't want to do what his traditional vampires do. And then my brain kind of connected that to like, what about like the old world and the new world? And like, you know, someone coming to America in the 20th century and like reinventing themselves. And it like went way into that direction, the strange thing, but it was still kind of the same idea about the vampire who didn't fit in.
Yeah.
But then it just like intersected with like early American immigrant history. So like that's like David had this very visual, like hilarious thing. And then I had this like weird, nerdy, you know, cerebral thing. Actually, and like, together they kind of came up together as like a different thing entirely.
And that's
now
great,
we have this. Yeah, now we have a vampire who like. Yeah, so that's the second story about the Bleeding Heart Vampire,
where he's. Yeah, he still doesn't like to bite people, so he has to invent new creative ways to get blood out of people. And so that's
works with Thomas Edison to create the refrigerator so they can keep blood from blood banks. Like overnight. He can take a little off the top, and so it's completely like twisted history, but
and we were still able to get pretty gory with it kind of towards the end of the story without, you know, still straddling the line.
Bonnie and Clyde get into a shootout with them and stuff like that.
So. Was there anything that didn't make the book? Was there anything that you were like, might be too like silly?
I think that was the most extreme story that we were able to like. I can't even remember now, like what the other ideas were. Now we'll have to go through our archives and see what we can polish off for the inevitable sequel to Snug Evans. Which
whatever we can kind of like, the second place, the leftovers.
Well, the book has been out. The book's been out. What, just a few weeks now?
Just since like
just almost a month. Yeah.
And how is it doing?
Wait, what?
This
is information that
you don't know, but the books, they don't tell you until like 6 months out. They give you numbers and stuff like that. I mean,
what'd you just say? You said 6 months out?
that's, you know, the publishers give you like their numbers, like when they give you like the quarterly or like I think half monthly statements for your royalties. Yeah. it's pretty non-transparent. But I will say that when Dave,
I was going to ask, like, what about like downloads or, you know, doesn't Amazon have like some kind of a, an ordering chart or something, like if people are buying this stuff off
they have
Amazon.
The sales rank. The sales rank is kind of confusing because it's like that's just pretty, relative to everyone else. Like you don't.
Yeah,
know,
it's
like,
pretty arbitrary. That. It seems like so. It's kind of our only metric though to look at. You know, on a daily basis. It's not like we were obsessed with looking at it or anything. So.
Yeah. No. I have mine open right now. I will say that when we go.
Where are you at? Give us an update.
I'm not going to get the numbers here. It's sold a few hundred at least, and I know that when David and I go out in public, the events, like, kids snap it up. Like, that's I will say that response we can say is, like, very measurable. Like kids we don't know, like, not our friends. Kids come up, and, like, we hand it to them, and they start, like, disappearing into it. And, like, it sells better at public events than I would ever have thought. Like my comic book shrinkage sold before.
Yeah,
like,
it's been pretty
You get
pretty
some
cool.
kind of weirdos. My adult one. Like,
see the reaction to it.
And David, I'm sure you've had different kinds of experiences, but this one, like, you know, kids buy it up and, you know, in good amounts when they're when you're at an event.
Do they want their parents to see them buy it? Is it almost like it's almost like a dare, right? Like, I'm gonna find the grossest book on the shelf. Don't you think that there's a psychology to it, like what y'all are doing, that's actually pretty smart? Like, that goes back to the Garbage Pails Kids and that kind of stuff, where it's like, I'm gonna ask for something gross and I'm going to test the limits of what my parents will acceptably get me. And with something like a school book fair, where kids want to go and they maybe they have, like, you know, a couple dollars, or they have their allowance and they're going to get the one thing that they can afford, right? Don't you think that's an opportunity for them to kind of test the limit there in front of their parents and see, like, what they can get away with? You guys are kind of like a gateway drug to that kind of behavior. Delinquency? I don't want to accuse you of delinquency.
I certainly hope so. I think that is kind of like the little narrow window where, you know, which is, it's tricky because nowadays there's so many like gatekeepers, like, you know, parents and educators and stuff like that, who are like, well, I don't know if this is good for kids. But that's when if we hope we can get it out to kids so they can kind of grab on it themselves. And then, yeah, like you said, like maybe it'll be like a kid who wasn't planning to get a book. They're like, oh, this looks like a cool, crazy, disgusting thing. So it's not like a nerdy book. It's like a, you know, it's a pictorial thing that will horrify my parents. So I think that is kind of like the, you know, the goal of it. But, you know, a lot of parents are cool nowadays too. That's the problem, unfortunately.
That's the problem. Right.
I feel like you've been part of that. You've probably helped with that. You've probably made a lot of parents cooler with your pocket.
No, I think that it's a great idea. And I think that there's a place for it. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a place for a book like this, because I mean, I don't think we turn out so bad with the Boglins and the Madballs and stuff like that. Like, true. You know, remember like that Castle Grayskull when it would have like the goo that you could put out? You know, so many many toys back in the day had ooze as part of them, you know, and like squirt guns and stuff like that are designed to kind of be offensive in a sense. And like,
I think David's frozen again. Are you frozen, David?
David might just be really, really bored with the conversation. No,
I think David's house is full of carbonite.
David's in Texas. If I see David moving, I'll add him back to the show. But David has to prove to us he's alive first.
No, I think you're right. We grew up with that stuff. And honestly, like, if you go on YouTube, like, slime making is like a huge.
Yes. Thing. What is up with the kids and the slime?
You sound just really disapproving, but.
No, I mean, kids love that stuff, because my worry is that, like, it's just going to get like everywhere. But like, kids love slime. It's become like a full thing. Like you said, like, kids learn how to make that stuff online.
Not only that, but like, I'll just, a little, Dave and I have partnered up with here in Southern California, a company called Rockin' Slime, who's a slime party thing. And so we're joining forces to create like a snot slime party, birthday party experience that has like slime making and like stuff like games from the kids, and we're actually demoing this like next month at a party.
You come, okay, let's say I order that thing for my kid. Do I gotta put like plastic sheets on everything? Like, tell me how this works. Like, I order the slime party for my kid. What shows up at my door? Because it doesn't sound like a dude in a Darth Vader outfit to, like, you know, sing songs. Like, it's not like a princess that you get for your daughter.
They come to your, I think they do it, you know, they do it in backyards or if you're at a park, wherever it is. And they have a whole thing. They've been doing this for a while. Like, they, I don't know if they do tarps or not, but like, they all, like, it's all like, you know, it's not, it's all cleanable stuff. You know, it's not staining stuff, but they come and they have a whole package where they bring their slimes. They show you how to make it. You can mix and match them. You put like, you know, figurines in them and stuff like that. And it's a whole thing. And like, they're booked every weekend because everybody wants a piece of that. So we thought, you know, I reached out to them because I saw what they were doing. I was like, seems like we're, you know, we're simpatico here. So we're going to try it out and see like we can, you know, create sort of a kind of a theme party where you do that. And also you're playing games we have a game called sort of the floor is lava, but it's like the floor is disgusting. And it's mm-hmm. David makes pictures of like poop and vomit and all stuff like that. The kids are trying to avoid stepping on that. So all the things that we love in the book in his style combined with slime is, you know, immersive disgustingness, I call it.
So it's almost like a Twister, but if you
land
on a different picture and there you go.
And then and then I've developed over a couple of public events, I've created some recipes for I call disgusting delicacies. So one of them, this is like, you know, homemade food, but it has like it pretends to be gross. So like one of them is like, I call it Flemin bars, like Phlegm. They're like mm-hmm. Lemon bars with green food coloring. So they look yellow, green, snot color.
Or I'm shaking my head, but people are going to want these.
Right? Right?
I'm shaking my head. Like, there's no way that anything that's going near my face, but it, absolutely.
Kids want to do it.
They're going to want to push the envelopes. Like, kids are establishing who they are in this world, and they're going to want to push the envelopes with this stuff. Right. Rob, how much can you tell me about this Marvel project you've got? Scott Lang, is it a comic book? Is it a graphic novel? Like, what's this Scott Lang project?
Oh, the Scott Lang. Marvel? So if your audience remembers, if they saw Ant-Man and the Wasp 3, Quantumania, mm-hmm. The very beginning, so Scott Lang is retired after the Infinity Saga from superheroing, and now he's written his memoir, and he's like a celebrity book author, and he's like going around touring, and like that's actually, you know, kind of part of the friction at the beginning where his daughter Cassie, aka Stinger, says, "You know, you've lost your hero touch, Dad. You don't care about helping people anymore," and that sort of becomes the plot of the movie. So Marvel decided to release that as an actual book written as Scott Lang, and so they hired me as the ghostwriter for it.
So it's a prose book.
It is a full, like full of words, prose book, as if it was the book he was reading, written by Scott Lang.
It's not a comic at all. It's
no.
I'm gonna have to work for the laughs on this one.
Yeah, you could say that. You could say that.
That sounds great. Geekscape. As Christian Blatt brought this to my attention, he said, "Can you ask Rob about the Scott Lang book?" And I was like, "Absolutely." I just thought because it's Marvel and it's Scott Lang, Ant-Man, that it was going to be a comic. The fact that it's a prose book, and not just that, but the book from Quantumania, that's pretty funny.
It's pretty cool. Like, it was basically like the in-universe rationale for it is that the Avengers, you know, so it's interesting, like all of us on the screen saw what happened in like the Infinity Saga and stuff, but it's not clear that the general public, you know, of, you know, Earth 616 or whatever, like knew exactly what was happening. So, you know, what all these things and all the backstory to it and like all the sort of ins and outs, like they just started to thought things blowing up. The sky is dark with clouds again. You know,
right. What was going right. On.
So the idea is the Avengers wanted sort of their chronicle, a chronicle of what it all had happened, the whole story. And they sort of tapped Scott Lang to do it because he's kind of the everyman Avenger. He's kind of one foot in that world, one foot out of it. So he can kind of like communicate to people. So it's a bit of that. It's him telling his perspective on those things and also what he was told by everybody else. He's like the chronicler. And then also it's like him being like, you know, single dad, a divorcee, an ex-con, like what his life was like. And like, there's some like life advice. There's some like very, very like inspiring, like, you know, self-help stuff about like my life. And then there's a lot of Scott Lang jokes, you know, as well, like
but quips. He missed most of the stuff because he was in the blip, wasn't he? Like, he was in the quantum realm during the blip.
Yes, so he missed that part. So, so he picks up the story from everybody else.
From when the rat saved him.
Yeah, exactly. The whole book is thanks to the rat.
And you called Cassie Lang Stinger. It's not Stature.
I think it's Stature in the comics, and they're going with Stinger in the movies. But I might be wrong.
No, it's fine.
Don't call me on that one.
What'd you put in the book? I'm kidding.
No. So the thing with the book is that it takes place before Ant-Man 3 because he's reading it. So she doesn't really become any kind. She doesn't really level up. And well, I don't want to spoil anything, but
sure,
you knew that. You know it was going that way.
Yeah.
So she doesn't really assume any kind of superhero persona until that movie.
That's cool, man. I didn't know it was a prose book. That sounds great. I know like a ton of people are going to actually think that's cool. Not just as like, a story in a book, and your writing is really fun, and I'm sure it's a good book, but it's also a piece of merchandise. Like, it's almost like a piece of merch.
It's from the universe.
Movie. Yeah.
It's from the universe. And when I have one more cool detail that I can drop about that, that's probably about all I'm allowed to say right now.
Before the Marvel lawyers swoop in.
Yeah. They've already swooped in. Yeah. They've come in with S.H.I.E.L.D. and so what I can say is that in the acknowledgement, so it puts Scott Lang's name on the cover, and then I'm sort of on the inside cover, the inside title page as the with Rob Cutter, as they do with Ghostwriters. And then in the acknowledgements, Scott Lang thanks me for being his writing coach, which means technically, Jonathan, I am in the MCU.
You're absolutely in the MCU. You're absolutely in the MCU. You probably taught him how to punch Kang out. Like you did.
I mean,
who knows?
I'm all about all the fisticuffs. That's kind of my
thing. This is the second book.
You know about me.
Speaking
pugilistic.
Speaking of people you've knocked out multiple times, maybe David in this interview, you've knocked out of the interview several times in this conversation. I think David is back. I the state of Texas isn't going to keep him from connecting to the internet.
Is he trying to get in?
Here's the thing. I can see David when he's in the wings waiting to come back. And I just need him to move. Last time, David, we didn't know if you were frozen or just fucking bored. You were just bored out of your mind.
No. I generally just sit here staring. I mean, even, if I'm excited. So I apologize. I'll try to do better about, acting like I'm a live person.
If David dies in the course of this conversation, we won't know for another 20 minutes.
My family probably won't know either. They're just like... This is the most boring
final destination.
Until I start to smell bad, but that's par for the course. Also,
that's on brand.
Right? Yeah, exactly. It's like this. The whole book was just inspired by my life.
Who are some of your inspirations, David? Like when you think about your art, start drawing? And like we were talking earlier about kids and wanting to push the envelopes and gross out this and that. Was that part of your art style from the beginning? Was being kind of a bit of a mini provocateur right there with some gross out pictures and stuff?
Yeah, not really. I first started trying to imitate Jim Davis's style. I was a big Garfield fan as a kid. And when I started drawing comic strips, I wanted to draw like him. And then it was the combination of seeing Mad Magazine. I remember the first issue I saw, it was the summer of 89 when the Batman, Tim Burton's Batman came out. There was Alfred E. Newman as Batman on the cover of Mad. And that was just like, blew my mind for some reason. It was just like, well, they're making fun of Batman. Oh my God. How could they do such a thing?
They must have some stones to be going.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Little do they know that they're both owned by the same company and it's all synergistic, it's a very famous cover. I remember absolutely picking that up and you had to vote. Like, are you a cracked guy? Mm-hmm. Are you a mad kid? Are you a mad kid or a cracked kid? Like, did you ever do that where you're like, but cracked did the horror stuff that I liked. The cracked was like, we're doing the Freddy and Jason issues. And I was really into that.
I always gravitated towards Mad first because cracked always in my mind, they were both good. Look at them now. But like at the time I was just like, cracked is just a cheap imitation. But looking at it later, I was like, oh, cracked has some really good stuff. And a lot of the same Mad artists work on both of them. So after I started drawing like Jim Davis, it was the combination of, like I see Mad Magazine and like all the like Sergio and Al Jaffe and Tom Bunk, who did this famous comic strip called The Zit, where it's like this guy popping his pimple and it's like his entire innards are spewing out. That and then the Ren and Stimpy show is when that was it. I'm like, I'm gonna be gross and weird, and then I discovered Underground Comics, Arkham, all the Zap comics, and then that whole world. And I was like, I'm not gonna draw cutesy Jim Davis until I get paid to do it later, which I actually worked on the Boom Studios Garfield comic a few years ago.
That's awesome. Does it make you feel good that I feel this is what I've been witnessing, that like Gen Z is discovering Garfield and it's becoming like an icon for them? We're like, hey, I don't give a fuck, I'm Garfield kind of thing. Like Garfield is almost like this alternative, like,
it's a
symbol
weird,
for them.
It's a weird like kind of thing because Garfield used to be kind of like the punchline for like, oh, how lame newspaper comics are. Kind of, oh, it's, he's just a fat cat that eats Mondays. That's hilarious. But then it became like, kind of like to like him ironically. And now I think people genuinely like it. Now I'm not sure if it's round the corner to or not or what, but it does have an odd cult following.
I've just noticed it on social media that people that are 20 years younger than me are starting to post Garfield stuff. And I can't imagine Garfield was that big of a deal in their childhoods. I mean, because Adult Swim really was the end all of
right.
You know, the influence in animation for those kids is the Adult Swim stuff, the Nickelodeon stuff. All that stuff is stuff that I'm a little too old for, but I liked CatDog. I thought CatDog was amazing. The gross out stuff that Adult Swim was big on, and obviously Ren and Stimpy being the beginning of that, it just felt like Garfield was never going to be able to top that stuff. And here we are with Garfield.
I don't know if we've matured. Well, I wouldn't dare say we've matured as a country to get past the, I hope to God we don't, because we have a book called Snot Goblins to sell. But I don't know. It's weird what catches on, with the internet. There may have been a Garfield, I think, is big with memes. And I think that could be a big part of why he's had a resurgence, don't ask me.
I think Garfield has recaptured something that Gen X, which I think all of us are already knew, the kind of whatever attitude, like Gen Z had this moment of oh my gosh, everything's so important and everything's so dramatic and it's a crisis. And it's like, isn't it more relaxing to just not care?
Just like give an F. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
I think that's why I gravitated towards Garfield, because it was
That's why
absolutely the Gen X character.
But it took Gen Z some time to get to that. Like, I think.
Right. Did they have to? They're exhausted. Almost a serious note. Is it like they got beat into submission by the realities of the world because they kind of, I mean, Gen Z is a fairly idealistic generation where they're we're going to make sure that everything is PC. We're going to make sure that everything is a cause. We're going to make sure that, listen, I'm as into that stuff as anybody, but motherfuckers, pace yourselves. Okay. Pace yourselves.
It's a marathon. Yeah.
Cause y'all hit 22 and y'all were done. I don't know anybody, but none of these Gen Zers, by the time they got to 27, 28, were still as passionate about the cause. All started becoming Gen X pretty quickly.
Right. Yeah. I don't remember ever being that idealistic. I was like, I knew I wanted the world to be better, but I don't know what
the hell am I going to do.
I'll just draw silly pictures and hope for the best.
I kind of love the idea when I opened this book that it was anthology, that there was a Tales from the Crypt guide, like a character, that there was somebody that gave it structure and presented the stories. Is that something that could lend itself to an animation, to maybe a cartoon series, maybe something that maybe could even be shorts, right? I think cartoons that are over 12 minutes at this point.
Yeah, no, I think it totally could, Rob. I don't know. Yeah, write some and let me know. And I'll draw.
I totally have an eye on that, because I think first of all, the style of it is so unique, that the visual style, to throw back to Dave, is, could easily lend itself to something that people would want to watch. But also I think, the storytelling thing. And also I don't know if you've noticed this, but the kids kind of all live in the same cinematic universe. Like, they all have elements of each other's world. So it could be sort of like the way South Park is. It could be like a world where you could kind of just touch off on one of them. I think you could have the Adventures of the Stepmommy Family or something every week, or the Snot Goblins kids are fighting with the Snot Goblins for supremacy of the world. Like, you could sort of extend one.
In the next book, I want a map. I want a map. In the next book, I want a map.
Tolkien style.
A Tolkien style map where we see where all these different characters live in the world.
I don't think I want to draw that, to be honest.
You stay out of this, David. You stay out of this. All right? We're setting your fate, okay? You stay out of this.
You stay out of the drawing part.
Your sails have been set, okay? The wind is coming, pal. Just make sure those sails are ready to go. So, remember when you were a kid and you would get a textbook? And you would get a cover for it, like a piece of paper cover, and you would it was like Kraft Bread or something, right? Like, it was a sponsored thing in Texas. Remember that, David? In Texas, it was always Mrs. Baird's Bread, and they would come out with a mini poster size book cover, and you would have to take the top and bottom and fold them in, and then you'd get the sides, and those would fit into the sleeves of the book, and then you'd have your book cover. But if you were cool and you were like, F Mrs. Bear's Bread, I don't want to do this shit, you'd turn it inside out so you could draw on it, right?
That's what I did.
Cool kids had a fucking Mrs. Bear's Bread logo on their books. They turned it inside out and drew the little S thing on it and vandalized the thing. You know what I mean?
I was too dorky to even do that. That was what the cool dorky kids were doing. I was dorky. I was just trying to draw Garfield. So
I definitely would put, I was a good student, so I'd put the subject of the book on it, but then I would just riff. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I would draw all sorts of stuff on that book cover. Just an idea, guys. You do that with a map of the Snotiverse, and Snot there Goblins. You go.
Yeah, well, that would be cool. I was thinking we could do Snot Goblins bookmarks, but my kid just started middle school, and they don't even give out textbooks anymore.
Hell so. No. It's all digital, man. It's all digital. Yeah, you got to have a map.
It's also Texas, too.
Texas. Right. We don't even know what books are.
Yeah, Snot Goblins is about to get banned.
Yeah. The good is the internet works great.
Let's do a map. Okay, this is where I'm now your manager for the project property. Let's do a map. All right. Let's see where all these characters land, and maybe that's friendly to Hollywood. And then can I be present for the animated recordings? I just want to hear the snot.
Oh, totally. I mean, yeah.
That will be the most disgusting cartoon recording. The
squelching
of all time.
The squelching folio.
Just some really serious Shakespearean actor who was like he's Idris all theater.
Elba.
Idris Elba, and he's just sitting there making snot sounds in a recording booth. Can I be in on that? Can I be there for the gross totally. Out?
You got to take recordings.
Oh, yeah. I'd pay money to see that.
You can have an exclusive.
All right. And here's the spinoff, Fart Goblins.
Oh, come on. What do you take us for?
Some immature so childish.
Yeah.
All right. It can get worse from there, folks. It can get worse from
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to tell you, I have a 10-year-old son, and he's like, how about this? How about that? And I'm like, I'm taking notes. Because it's like,
You basically just landed on my maturity level here. It only took me.
Mine too.
Your second visit. And welcome to Geekscape, Robert. You found mentally. Yeah, your kid's probably more.
I was already there. We just met. Meeting of the minds.
I love it, guys. Guys, I hope the book does amazingly well. I think it's fun. I think what we're going to do as your manager, let's start the full court press going into Christmas. Let's start this up. Okay, let's start this up. LA Comic Con is the first weekend of December. But we can't wait until then. We got to start before that. All right.
What about Halloween?
Halloween would be huge. Are we going to maybe do a Party City party or like a snot goblins themed snot costume?
That's great. Dave, you can make costumes, right? How hard is that?
I'm learning the relationship. I'm getting a pretty good beat on this relationship where you get an idea and just be like, David,
you're not just their manager. You're like,
David, it's all you.
It has been since the book release. Like Rob has all these, really good promotional ideas, but they require artwork, and so
he looks well rested, but David not so much.
Well, yeah, I've been struggling with the internet down here in Texas, and just it's been kind of a beating.
Well, Rob,
go ahead.
You feel what?
I would say I feel very lucky to have David because like I do have crazy ideas, and every time like I've never worked with an illustrator before. Like anytime I work with an illustrator, they're like, "Well, I'm busy for 6 months," or pay me $500 just for writing a panel or whatever. And David's like, sure, I want to sell this book. Let's do that.
Right, you guys went in on the proposal together.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we're the co-creators of it. So, but I'm saying like for promotions, like he's down to do anything. Like I say, usually the same day he'll send me something back that's like perfect, So. Well, I think we're a good team.
Don't push it.
Perfectly gross.
No, I like, I have just as much stake in the book as you do. And, you come up with really good ideas, like the thing you took to Comic-Con with the big snot goblin, on a stick.
I didn't see no snot goblin on a stick.
Oh, do you have it with you?
Yeah. Why didn't you interrupt my panel with the snot goblin on a stick?
There you go. This is the snot selfie. So anybody wants takes a picture with this coming out of their nose, and so we get a lot of kids doing this.
Yeah, lines around the block to do that at Comic-Con. Right?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, this is where I think the book number two, when it comes out next summer, you'll have it over at the Geekscape booth. I just gave you an impossible deadline, David. But guys, I think honestly, like let's get out there and let's hit the pavement with this thing. Are libraries maybe being open to you guys coming and doing readings, or is this just too much? You know what I mean? Like, remember back in the day, like one of the big sales, and people always tell me that about like kids' books. Here's the thing: there's a Jonathan London in kids publishing, and I get an email about once every 2 weeks at this point, asking me to come read a Froggy book in a library, and I got one yesterday, and it's like I am not the author of the Froggy books, even
you
though
you should show up and reclaim it.
I'm just gonna go to Sarasota, Florida, to read a library.
Yeah. Wait, I remember reading those with my kids, and I was like, "Is that the same guy?" And I
just, no, just like I'm illiterate. Things. No, I don't have that level of literacy to write the Froggy books. That guy's a genius.
People have side hustles, you know? I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't do Geekscape if that was my side hustle, because those books were fairly successful, I believe. But I think that with this, let's get into those libraries and read to kids.
We're working on that. Like, first of all, I know it's in the LA Public Library system, actually, if you look in the catalog, it's in there already. But I am actually trying to, I don't know if I told David this, I'm auditioning in about 3 weeks. They have an audition where to be a presenter in the libraries, and then if they accept they send you on the circuit. So what I'm doing is, I don't want to bum the kids out after everything we said, but there's a couple of true things in there in the book. There's some true science. There's a little bit of history. The stuff is real. Anytime there's like a fact thing in there, it's usually kind of more or less based on something real. So I kind of pull those out. And so I come up with like a little sort of presentation where I'm going to talk about like in one of the stories, the troll versus troll story, remember the cave trolls? The cave has a pet bioluminescent fish, and he mentions luciferin, like the chemical that makes bioluminescent fish. It's like in the context of a joke, but so yeah. I don't think I told you this, Dave. So I ordered from a science company crushed up fireflies contain that, and if you moisten them in the dark, they glow. So I'm going to do a science demo.
Oh, that's freaking awesome! Oh man,
so yeah. So I'm like going to try that's to do that cool. as libraries and for schools. So hey, it's educational.
Yeah. Wait, yeah.
Did you keep a lot of secrets in the making of this book, Rob?
So much is coming out on this podcast. This is like a real breakthrough.
Hang on, Rob, you wrote the book?
Yeah. Also, Dave, I've been banging your wife.
Oh, Jesus.
I waited until he went for the water for that, but he didn't spit
anything out. All right, guys. The book can be picked up. It's not goblinsbook.com. Geekscapist. Yes. That'll lead you right to where you can purchase it. If you are thinking about that teenager in your life, they're like, hey, they're probably going to want this. This seems like a pretty good idea. The Ant-Man book, the Scott Lang book, will be out. When it comes out, we'll post
September,
it.
September 5th, like I think.
It's September 5th, that's like in 2-3 weeks. It's perfect.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And then, that's David, awesome. what's next for you after the Snotfest? Which is what we're calling this era.
Snotfest, yeah.
Snotfest.
Well, like I say, I have a new book in the works. I can briefly touch on it.
Sure.
It's the first project I've done in a long time. It doesn't have anything gross to do with anything gross. It's about a little...
This conversation's over.
Yeah.
That was David to bring, Rob, everybody. No, go ahead.
To bring anybody down,
he talked about bioluminescent fish. Like, we're not that geeky. No, I'm kidding. We're actually very geeky.
This book, it's a kid's book. It's meant for younger kids. It was brought about like the emotions I saw that people were dealing with during COVID, where it was like people tried to tackle a lot of things and like just feeling like just beat down in them. And I drew this image with this little happy little forest critter and with the words, I am not okay, surrounding him. And it just like was just inspired by like, yeah, during everything that just has gone on since the past 4 or 5 years. And an editor I worked with for a long time saw it and was like, why don't we try to turn this into a book project? So I came up with a story where there's this little fluffy, happy critter that like he sings songs for everybody to make them happy. And then through the course of a day, everybody keeps coming to him with different problems. And he has to keep singing this happy song. And he ends up just having a nervous meltdown. And it's trying to teach kids to learn to deal with your problems on your own. And also, it's also relatable for parents to not try to, you know, that you don't have to take care of everything. Let your kid kind of be self-sufficient. And there's a lot of these kind of like sort of ideas I'm kind of trying to compress this little idea. I have an 11-year-old and a 6-year-old.
So, but I mean, you obviously were thinking of them and, you know, growing
up. Oh, yeah. I can't not. Anything I make now, I have to kind of put through them as a filter, you know, to see if would they like it, would they think it's funny, you know, something that them or their kids would.
It's a different
thing. They tell me they do. You know, yeah. Like the emotions I see, you know, like as not only as parents, but, you know, you see the stuff that your kids go through. So I try to write stuff that's, you know, kids can relate to. Because I was remember when I was reading books as a kid, you know, if I could relate to it emotionally, whatever, that would really resonate with me and it'd be memorable. So what's with all the,
I mean, it's simply titled from this one,
called I Am Not Okay.
You've already started to put it together.
I'm still workshopping different names, but
His lawyer just said that's enough of that. David, you could actually hear when Ultron pulled the plug on him. Like you could literally
that's his lawyer.
Hear it. Okay, he's back. All right, David, you got snagged hard by the legal department. They're like, no.
Yeah, there, man.
Next thing you know, this moron's going to want a map and a you know, so he's like, no, do not tell Jonathan any more ideas. He will make them stupid and uncommercial immediately.
I'm doing a good enough job of that on my own. So
no, don't be like that. All right. Geekscapists, clearly these two need emotional support and you can only provide it through with your wallet. You're gonna go to snotgoblinsbook.com. And again, like if you're thinking of somebody who's like, oh, I was thinking about getting them into like, again, Madballs, Garbage Pail Kids, trauma movies, all the stuff teenagers are into. Even now, like we said, like the stuff that we were into in the 80s and 90s, that stuff all seems to be coming back.
It's like Toxic Avenger coming out.
Right now, absolutely. Yeah. And so Geeks gave us snotgoblinsbook.com. And of course, like, we always love having Rob on the program, and David now too. Once David gets
once I can plug into the 21st century, whatever.
Could you imagine if you'd use that iPad?
Mm-hmm. I probably wouldn't have a single problem. I asked you. You said they use a laptop.
So. Yeah, please use a laptop. And then I think if you would have used an iPad, you would have frozen. And then when you came back on, you would have been on fire. So I think there's shards of glass in your face. Everything just exploded.
I'm 4 seconds away from setting myself on fire all the time.
Yeah. Anyway, so. Thanks, Greg Abbott. Just one more thing I can say fuck you about. You assholes. I'm sorry. My parents live there. I have friends who live back in Texas.
Oh, yeah. And, well, we find our own groups of sane people and try to, you know, keep each other alive.
Yeah. Yeah. My dad was telling me today, he's like, this is a second straight month of like 100 degree weather. There's like some crazy streak of 100 degree days.
Yeah. It was like 106 today, I think. Really?
My birthplace has just become hell, is what it sounds like.
Both yeah. Pretty much.
All right, guys. Congrats on the book. I'm excited to read it some more. Thanks for sending me that copy, but I want to hold it in my hands. What about Scratch and Sniff Snot Goblins?
Ooh.
I'm throwing all of it at you. I was
next
like,
level. I love it.
Yeah, I'm throwing it all at you. Guys, the book's called Snot Goblins. You can pick it up anywhere you can get books. Order online, snotgoblinsbook.com. If you want to follow Rob online, the best place to do it is
robkuttner.com.
And if you want to follow David online, the best place to do that is
degrandland.com.
Okay, degrand.
Degrandland. Right, yeah, degrandland.
All right, awesome. Yeah. Geekscape, you know where to find us. Geekscape, just search your Geekscape, you'll find the podcast. Leave a review. That helps us out a lot when people are like, oh, some other guy liked this podcast. Maybe I'll listen to that. And it kind of like floats the algorithm on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and all that stuff. So it really helps us out. I appreciate y'all doing that. I'll get all the Comic-Con shirts up on the store online. I promise, I will. We're already almost sold out of a bunch of stuff. So I think I have to reorder some stuff. And the best way to reorder it is to sell the rest of it to you guys. So I have money to reorder stuff. So Geekscape is like, we're working. And we'll see you guys next week for a brand new Geekscape. And I think we have a Blue Beetle episode coming up too. So hit the subscribe button, share with your friends, and you'll find out a little bit more as we explore this Geekscape together. Thanks guys for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, man. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Yeah, thanks. This is awesome.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.